the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and it's always a pleasure to say hello to our good friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. You can follow his work at TexasSportsNation.com. Also on Twitter, a fantastic follow at McClain_on_NFL. He joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. John, how is Indianapolis?
Well, it's been snowing all day. It's beautiful outside. I spent all my time inside at the Combine today. Now I'm back in my hotel room writing. The workouts start prime time this year for the first time tomorrow night, and it's going to be fun for people to be able to see more. It's strange. They want to put it on live. I mean, the NFL Network runs the Combine results about 100 times a day between the Combine and the draft, so it's not like you don't get to see it. But the league's banking on the fact that maybe people want to see the 40-yard dash and the players throw and catch in their underwear on TV. I don't know. We'll see. But we've had interviews now for the last 2 days, and then the players crank it up tomorrow, and I know they get really excited about that. The thing that is the most exciting is the 40-yard dash, and I went back and looked. For going back to 2006, the fastest players every year, Tennessee Titans running back Chris Johnson is the only one that amounted to anything in the NFL. Usually, the fastest and the strongest aren't the best prospects.
Interesting. Tell me, how do you feel that Joe Burrow was able to digest the devastating news that he had the smallest hands among the first-round quarterback prospects?
I don't know if he'll be able to get over it somehow. Being the first pick and getting a $20 million signing bonus might help to soothe the pain. But I remember in 2017, people were wringing hands over the Texas Tech quarterback who came in with a big arm and the big stats, thought he would be a low second-round pick, and if he did well at the combine, he might elevate his status to middle of the second round. And no way he was going to be a big-time prospect because he came from an air raid system coached by Cliff Kingsbury, and those guys didn't make it in the NFL. And his hands turned out to be too small, and people are like, oh, my God, this Mahomes kid, you know, he might drop down in the third round, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
Never, John and Jimmy, let me tell you something. The only time I hear anybody talking about right-hand size of a quarterback, and that's measured from the pinky to the thumb, is at the combine. And once they leave here, nobody says a word about it.
Now, but if you can throw the ball 50 yards or so while on your knees, you can become a first-round draft pick for the Ravens or other teams.
Yeah, there's some quarterbacks that did that. I remember Jamarcus Russell, when he had his pro day at LSU, Al Davis fell in love with him. Everybody told him, don't use the top pick on this quarterback. And he did it anyway. And there's been a lot of coaches and general managers who got themselves in trouble based on a guy being able to throw the ball from his knees. And the fact is, how many times does he throw from his knees in a game?
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that always stands out, so many people can get caught up in the paralysis by analysis. When there is more video now available of game time execution, you can either, I mean, there's just almost every game is televised some way, shape, or form. If it's not on TV, it's then streamed video. Why do you figure that so many still get locked in to the measurables at the combine as opposed to what they can see is actual performance?
That's a great question, John. Mike Mayock, the Raiders general manager, who was a top broadcaster for NFL Network for so long, he was asked that today, and he's talking. They were asking him, okay, why is it certain positions, like, say, wide receiver, they usually have a hard time making the adjustment, even though they might have great size and great speed and athleticism, and so much of it's mental. you know, going in to become difference in college and pros. Some of it could be confidence. Some of it could be you get the money and you don't want to put out anymore. Some of it could be injury. Some of it could be your coaches, your position coach, your system doesn't fit. There are so many variables behind the tangibles, and yet they put so much emphasis on it. You can, NFL teams have a fit if you claim they put very little emphasis on what a guy does in college. They just go ballistic. But the truth of the matter is, could they do any worse if they only were able to scout game and practice tape, and once the college season was over, they didn't get to do another thing? I don't think so.
John, I want to ask you about the CBA. I read where the NFL Reps Executive Committee voted 6-5 against the owner's proposal. Then that was amended to 7-4 against the proposal. There have been, it's not just the 17 games. We know there's a variety of other things, which includes expanding the roster, increasing minimum wage, et cetera. How do you think they're going to vote on this? Do you think the players are actually going to pass this?
I do, and one reason is this. And I may be wrong, and I've been going through this since 77, had strikes 82, strike in 87, lockout in 2011. And that executive committee that voted 7-4 against, that's a recommendation. It's not a vote. And so then you go to the 32 player reps, and they vote, and they voted, I think, there was an abstention. It passed by one, and somebody abstained. And so then it goes to the rank and file, and the rank and file don't have a clue about what's going on. They depend so heavily on their player rep. And one of the knocks that's not getting any attention is for the 17th game. It's getting players getting $250,000 for it, and yet there's a lot of players making more than that per game, so they're going to take a pay cut, and they don't like it. Now, they represent the small part. For the majority of the league, the middle class and the lower class, this is going to be a $100,000 increase in their minimum pay. It's going to be increased in a lot of other ways. And a lot of things, you know, they can smoke all the pot they want. If they get caught, it's not as, you got to have more in your system before it's against you, and you only have to get tested once, and you get more time off, and you get fewer padded practices, and instead of having two practices in shells, you get 5 days now to start camp so you can adjust your little body to having to get hit a little bit. And all these concessions they're making, and the fact of the matter is the new network TV contract's going to be negotiated in 2022, and teams already make $225 million apiece before the season from network TV, and that's not counting DirecTV and streaming rights. And so they want to get this deal done, the league does, so they can go into these negotiations with no worries about labor peace, because teams don't want, the league networks don't want to fork over billions and billions of dollars and then have a strike and the ratings go down and cancel games, play replacement football. Then when they come back, everybody's mad at them, so they don't watch them on TV, and it takes them a year to recover in the ratings. So that's why a lot of players are not happy, and they want to get more. They think, one of them was quoted today saying, we want to be like baseball and basketball, where the players are equal partners. Well, they've never been equal partners in the NFL. The owners run the NFL, and the unions run the other two sports.
Do you think there are some player reps that have greater influence over their teammates than other player reps?
No, I would think that'd be a very shrewd shrewd observation, Jimmy. That's got to be the case, because some guys are just more respected than others. Some players who care, say there's 60 guys on a team and 10 of them really care, and they're influential with the rest of their rank and file. If they think a guy is devoted to it, like Eric Winston, the president of the union, when he was a player, he was all about it. He wasn't radical, but he was all about the knowledge and making sure they knew the strengths and weaknesses of each proposal. So I think that's a great observation. There are guys that are better than others that wield a lot of influence, and sometimes that's team leaders.
Do you think they will conclude that vote by Friday, which ESPN has reported?
There's been a lot of reporting by the networks about what's going to happen and hadn't happened. So there are other reports today that this thing may drag on for 2 weeks. So I have no clue about what's going, how long that vote's going to take.
Our guest is John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We'll get a break. We've got more with John coming up as Sports Talk continues on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
If you smell something, that's probably us. We are 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, as he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates hotline from the Combine in Indianapolis. John, no surprise at all that we see a team like the Giants make a big cut in Alec Ogletree, cutting $8.2 million from their salary cap. I guess you would expect other big cuts to be looming out there around this time of year, wouldn't you?
It always happens, and some teams have better cap situations than others. Some use the cap as an excuse to get rid of veterans, and they say, oh, we need the money to pursue other players or re-sign our players or to sign our better players to extensions, when the fact is they're just trying to get out from under bad contracts. And we're going to see more of that as we get up to the start of the new league year on March 18th at 4 Eastern, and that just Ogletree would be the tip of the iceberg. And if something happens every year, and a lot of the guys will sign with other teams for less money. Most guys, if they're going to take a pay cut, you got to give them something to do it, which is like re-sign them, give them a signing bonus, but spread it out over years so it doesn't count as much as your previous contract did under the cap. Or most guys get offended when their team cuts them, and they'll go somewhere else for less money than they could have taken in a restructured deal with their previous team. And that's one reason we see so much movement.
Who has been the best interview that you've heard thus far in Indianapolis?
Well, I just interviewed him today, Josh Jones, left tackle from the University of Houston, who Todd McShay has going 10th to Cleveland and Mel Kiper 15th to Denver. I don't think he'll be drafted that high, having gone low in the first round. And I knew about him at the University of Houston. He's a four-year starter with 45 starts, 6'5", 319, did really well at the Senior Bowl. But I'd never paid attention to the interview, and he stood at the podium today, and he was entertaining. He was informative. He was funny. Somebody noticed, he said, is that an Astros tattoo on your arm? He said, yes, sir, it is. And before you ask, don't even go there. I'm not getting into it. And, you know, when a 6'5 guy, 319, tells you don't want to talk about a cheating scandal, you don't ask another question. Then they say, so he brought up the fact his hobbies. And I said, what are your hobbies? He said, I love movies. Watching at home, I watch home. I go to the theater. I'll even go to the theater by myself. Then they ask him questions like, what do you eat, popcorn, Diet Coke, whatever, and he tells them. And then somebody asks him, what's your all-time favorite movie? And he said, Inception, which I still don't understand, so I lost respect for him. And they said, what's the last movie you saw, The Gentleman, which I thought was really good. And said, what's your favorite football movie? And he said, Friday Night Lights. I was hoping he'd say one of mine. And then somebody said, well, if you were in the film business, what would you be? And he thought a second. He said, well, I'd like to be an editor or a cameraman. I wouldn't want to be in front of the camera. I'm afraid I'd mess up too bad. And he just was really, really good talking about a lot of things. And I thought, man, when he meets with all these teams here, teams can meet with 60 players for 15 minutes over the course of the combine. He's going to impress the heck out of them. And, you know, if you're, say somebody was going to draft him, they came down between you guys, and they seen your tape, and they like your tape, and they think you both have a lot of talent, and they just can't decide. But Jimmy is a whole lot better interview than John. Sits up straight, shakes hands, says yes or no, some smiles, has a warm smile for everybody. And if you're looking for a tiebreaker, you're human. And when you like somebody, that's a good tiebreaker. Doesn't mean Jimmy's going to be a better player. but just helps Jimmy make a little more money.
Asked rude questions, too. John, in regard to the combine, off the top of your head, can you remember many players whose stock skyrocketed based on a combine performance?
Oh, my gosh, yes. The biggest combine freak of all, Mike Mamula, who was, wasn't even on the radar, had a big one. The Eagles drafted him high in the first round. He was a bust. I remember in 2006, everybody came in talking about this guy from NC State who had put on an incredible show, 6'6", 290. He ran, he jumped, he did everything. So who is he? He says, name's Mario Williams. And I'm like, yeah, I think I've heard of him. And he ended up going first overall. Jadeveon Clowney was the top-rated player in the country coming out of high school, as you guys know, and he was going to be the first overall pick anyway. But when his combine performance just had people salivating. And I remember when it comes to a receiver, I remember from another one from NC State, Haywood Jeffries, 1987, yeah. The Oilers drafted him in the first round because he caught everything thrown to him at the combine. And he was with a quarterback who threw him a lot of bad passes. He caught it. Now, it took him 3 years to get going, but he ended up going to the Pro Bowl a lot. So you should not let a player who has a great combine affect your judgment unless it is follows up on his season, his bowl game, his Senior Bowl, and then the combine, and then the pro day, and he continues to excel. But you should never do it just based on a combine performance.
Do you think Phillip Rivers winds up in Indianapolis?
It seems such a natural fit, Jimmy. Played for Frank Reich in San Diego. A lot of people think they want a veteran quarterback. He's got to be buying a good line. He had a terrible line at Chargers. They got a great line here. They have a good enough tight end and running back. They got a couple receivers. They have a high pick. They could get another receiver. Defense is good enough. It just makes so much sense. I keep thinking Brady's going back to New England, but I know they're worried about losing it because he wants to play with a team that's got talent, and his offense does not. And the Raiders do. I could see Mark Davis, even though he does not need Brady, to sell out games at Las Vegas, make him a preposterous offer like he did Gruden, say $35 million for 2 years, give him $70 million guaranteed to come to Vegas and play behind a good offensive line, good running game, great tight end. All he needs are receivers, and they could get CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, the two best in the draft.
What do you think of Bill O'Brien relinquishing play-calling duties?
That was a bombshell. That was such a big story. We got it. Three of us had a private interview with him before he came in to be interviewed by the masses because he hadn't talked since the end of the season, and he'd had a lot of things go on we wanted to ask him about, and he didn't want to waste his time answering our questions in front of all the reporters from around the country. And the last question, when the PR woman said, okay, guys, two more, one person asking, I said, Bill, by the way, have you given any more thought to your offensive coordinator, Tim Kelly, calling plays? And I thought I was going to get a stock answer. And he goes, yeah, Timmy's going to call the plays next season. And I almost swallowed my pen. So I had to keep the tape recorder on. I had to tweet upside down. And then he went into link. That was a big story in Houston because everybody, fans, media, had been demanding Bill O'Brien give up play calling for the last 2 years.
Have to get your thoughts on what you saw from the first trip for the Astros on the road in spring training. I guess you weren't surprised at the reception.
No, of course not. Their first game they played at home, they shared with the Nationals, and the Nationals had more fans for that game. And even though not one player played at all in 2017, most of them didn't play last season, they booed the heck out of them just because they're Astros. But another funny thing is, like, players from the Astros who were there in 2017 who've gone to other teams, they're getting cheered. Jake Marisnik, center fielder, who was traded to the Mets, got a standing ovation in his first at-bat, hit a home run, got another standing ovation. You know how it is. They hate you when you're with the other team, but they love you when you're with them. And, of course, all of them say they had absolutely nothing to do with any cheating in 2017. It was only those guys who were still there. And so I know Jose Altuve got hit in the foot by a breaking ball. And the story I heard here was, oh, my goodness, Altuve's first game, he got beamed. And then I called a friend of the media, and I said, where'd he get hit? He said, oh, my God, he got hit on a breaking ball on his foot. And I said, that's what we're going to go through all year.
Tell me this. Can mock drafts remain polite even when you and your counterpart disagree on who's going to be going to the Texans with that first pick?
Yeah, we've had to do four, and we still have to do another one every week. And I've had corners and one pass rusher, and he's had corners and pass rushers. Eventually, I may try to shake people up. Maybe I'll put a quarterback down there. But when you're doing that many mock drafts and the team has a second-round pick, you can't have them take a prospect you know is going to go in the first round because they picked 57th overall. So I tell you what, I'm learning a whole lot about that second, third batch of corners and pass rushers.
John, I know you got a lot going on, but what are you working on this week for the Chronicle and Texas Sports Nation?
Well, yesterday, of course, the Bill O'Brien bombshell on play calling. I wrote about that every day. I put on, I do a blog, a tweet. I also do what is called takeaways on our TexasSportsNation.com, which is where all my stories run. And I'm writing about Joshua Jones for tomorrow, trying to let people know who this kid is. And he was funny. I know the Texans don't need tackles anymore, but man, oh man, whoever gets him is going to get a kid that started 45 games, played 4 years, and his career is ascending. And then I've got to figure out some other ideas for the rest of the week.
Well, we'll let you go do that. Thank you so much for your time in Indy, and we look forward to catching up with you again next week.
John and Jimmy, thank you very much, as always.
Thanks, you. John. Safe travels. That's John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. Fantastic follow on Twitter, @McClain_on_NFL. We'll get a break and be back with more with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Join us on Sports Talk, 656-9900, 656-9900. *990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Sports Talk with you until 7 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, it'll be the starting 11 with Will West, as it's his new show about soccer. That'll be from 7 until 8. And then at 8 o'clock, Vol Network coverage begins as Tennessee is on the road tonight. The Volunteers looking for a season sweep against Arkansas. Normally, in the cage, the MMA radio with Vince Ferraro follows the starting 11. If you were hoping to tune into that tonight, it aired last night at 7 o'clock. You can go to 99.1thesportsanimal.com to find the podcast of last night's show. But tonight at 7, the starting 11 with Will West, and then Tennessee basketball coverage starts at 8 with the Vol Network.
The Lady Vols conclude their home regular season with a game against Ole Miss. Two seniors will be recognized. And Tennessee really needs to beat Ole Miss. Ole Miss has a 287 women's RPI. That's awful. You cannot afford to lose a game to a team like that, in particular if you're fighting to get in the NCAA tournament. So Tennessee needs to get the win, but that's a game Thursday night, 7 o'clock. One of those seniors, Kamara Harris, and she has been named as Tennessee's SEC Community Service winner. Each team in the SEC has one. But Harris met with the media early this week. Here are comments from the Lady Vols senior.
Cam, with it being senior night, can you kind of just talk about your time here at Tennessee?
Yeah, it's been great. It's really bittersweet that it's coming up, and it went by so fast, but it's been a great experience and had so many opportunities since I've been here, so I'm so grateful for it all.
What's the transition that this program has kind of taken in your time here? Can you kind of just describe, you know, day one here as a freshman to now, where this program has gone through?
Yeah, I think our group has been through a lot. I know in the past, you know, I think every team goes through things, but I kind of feel like I've been through it all, and it makes me proud, and it makes me grateful. I've learned so much about myself throughout my time here, and honestly, I'm just happy I've been through it here, and I wouldn't have picked anywhere else.
What does it mean to wear the Pantone 151 and that Lady Vol blue the last few years?
It means a lot, you know, the tradition that Tennessee has. It means a lot, and I'm proud, and honestly, I wouldn't choose any other color, so.
Any other questions for Cameron?
Taking on an increased role this year, was that kind of the expectation before the season began? Did Kelly Hoffer talk to you about maybe playing more minutes?
Yeah, me and Kelly met before the season, and my position kind of changed from last year. I played a five the last 3 years, and this year I played more of a forward position. So it's been a different role, but I felt like it kind of played to my strengths a little bit more. I'm more of a face-up post player than back to the basket, so that's really, I felt like I contributed a lot more this year than I did previously because it kind of plays more to my game style. So,
you mentioned that you've contributed more this year. You know, leading up to this point, you didn't get a lot of playing time. Was it kind of worth it waiting, though, to have this season where you come in games quite frequently?
Yeah, I've since high school, I knew what I was capable of. So I never felt like I had to prove anything to anybody because I know what I can do. But I don't know. Of course, it feels so good, you know, my senior year. If it was any four of the years, I would choose this year to, you know, kind of step up and have a larger role. So, I mean, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, this team is so young, so many freshmen and sophomores, seeing a lot of time on the field, obviously being one of those senior leaders. What's it been like to kind of guide them through their first 2 years and see the level of success that they've had?
Yeah, we have a young team, but their future is bright, and they work hard, they're smart, and I think, of course, we have some things to clean up on, but I say next year they're going to be a tough team to beat, and I know what they do behind closed doors, so I'm looking forward to seeing them.
Thursday, the end of your time playing here at Thompson Bowling, not the end of your time as a Lady Vol. You have the SEC tournament, you have the NCAA tournament hopefully coming up. As kind of one of the senior leaders on this team, what's the message to some of these younger players as you get ready for tournament time?
Honestly, postseason is just a fresh start. Everybody's 0-0, honestly, how I look at it. And I think anybody can win during tournament time. You see so many upsets and things like that. So honestly, as long as we just focus on and clean up the things we made mistakes on before during the regular season, I think we can get really far.
I know you've only been with Kelly for 1 year, but what has she meant to you during your time here at Tennessee?
She's meant a lot. She helped build my confidence a lot, and she put a lot of trust in me and put me in some situations that I haven't been challenged like that before. So I appreciate Kelly, and she means a lot to me.
When that final buzzer goes off on Thursday, what are you going to miss the most about playing at TBA?
I might actually cry. But just the fans, you know, when we travel to all these games, you always see orange, and no fan support shows up at any other arena than they do here. And I'm going to miss that, and the fan support, and just looking up in the stands and seeing how many people, you know, just support you through everything.
And that is Lady Vol senior Kamara Harris. Tennessee 18-9, 8-6 in the SEC. I think right now they're currently in seventh place in the standings. They would be a seventh seed in the SEC tournament if it started today. Ole Miss 7-20 on the year, 0-14 in the SEC. The Rebels are led by Deja Cage. She is the only player on the team averaging in double figures. She averages 12.3. Tennessee is led, of course, by Renia Davis, 18.1 points per game. Ray Burrell at 10.7. Jordan Horston comes off the bench and has been very productive in doing so. But when you look at Burrell in the five games that she has started, she's averaging 14.8 points, 7.6 rebounds. The Lady Vols rank number one in the SEC in rebounding, number two in the nation, averaging over 46 rebounds a game. They also were second in the SEC and second in the nation with 7.1 blocks per game. The leader is South Carolina in that category. Tennessee's 192 total blocks so far this year. That ranks number seven all-time on Tennessee's single-season list. And they have got, I would think, at least four more games to play, and it could be a lot more than that. But you got two more regular season games. You got the SEC tournament. You got postseason play, which I expect the NCAA tournament. So they should have at least four more games to play to add to that blocks total.
Yeah, and right now you're exactly right. Tennessee is the seventh seed if it started today, and they need to finish in front of LSU. LSU has something the Lady Vols don't have, and that is a victory against one of the five teams that are in front of both the Tigers and Lady Vols, and that's how you decide when there is an even series split like there was with Tennessee winning in Knoxville, LSU getting the win in Baton Rouge. So LSU plays home against Vanderbilt at Arkansas, so there's a chance for Tennessee to catch LSU when it comes to the regular season record. I just don't know if they can get past LSU to what would be a better seed. But it doesn't look like that either one will be a part of the double bye, which are the teams that don't play their first game until Friday. It looks like Tennessee is slotted into day two of the tournament.
Yeah, and the season has been one in which, for the most part, Tennessee's won the games they were supposed to win, and they have lost games that they either were supposed to win or were kind of toss-ups. I know the game at LSU, they beat LSU here, lost at LSU, but I don't think that was the game you, quote, were supposed to win.
Right.
So I think they've taken care of business there. The problem is they just haven't been able to beat a team that is currently ranked. Notre Dame was ranked when Tennessee played it, but Notre Dame's gone on to have a bad year.
Mm-hmm.
So that really, when in the scope of things, when you start analyzing the season and you start putting an RPI to it, you don't get much credit at all for beating Notre Dame because they have gone on to have maybe the worst year they've ever had under McGraw.
Right. And so, and even though you got the win at their place, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So Tennessee has Ole Miss tonight and then closes at Auburn. You have Ole Miss, which you mentioned, has not won a conference game this year, and Auburn is tied with Vanderbilt for 12th in the SEC, 3-10. That's a program that's fallen on hard times that used to be one that Tennessee had to get past to win regular season or conference tournament championship.
So the Lady Vols should win 20 games in the regular season. I would think they could pick up an SEC game, SEC tournament game. If they get another postseason win, they could get to 22. If you ask Kelly Harper, is she satisfied with that? The answer is no. But that is improvement over what Tennessee did a year ago.
That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. A final segment to hour number three of Sports Talk is coming up. We'll go ahead and update what's going on at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Tennessee with a run in the second, two in the third, tack on two more in the bottom of the sixth. They continue to work in the bottom of the sixth. There's nobody out, two runs in, and a runner at first. Tennessee leads UNC Asheville 5-0. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser Studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Tennessee playing long ball once again. Alaric Solari got the scoring started with a solo shot in the bottom of the second, and there have been two more home runs for Tennessee in the bottom of the sixth. You've got Connor Pavloni with another home run this year, his second, as he drove in Solari with his two-run shot. Evan Russell also homered to left-centered, a two-run blast, as his home run scored Luke Lipsius. So Tennessee with two home runs in the bottom of the sixth, Volunteers have increased their lead over UNC Asheville to 7-0. We're with you, of course, until 7 o'clock. You have the starting 11 with Will West from 7 until 8, and that's when Vol Network coverage begins for the Tennessee Volunteers on the road at Arkansas.
Trying to figure out the SEC Men's Tournament from the Tennessee perspective, I think there's a great chance that Tennessee will be either a 7, 8, or 9 seed. Just looking at everybody else, I don't think that they can drop to 10 because there's Missouri and Arkansas behind Tennessee by two games, and I don't see them running the table or winning 3 out of 4. I guess Arkansas has a chance, but I don't think they will. So that leaves you with Alabama, and Alabama could end up with as good or a better record than Tennessee. I'm not sure. I think Tennessee's going to catch anybody ahead of it, although A&M is a possibility to catch, but A&M holds the tiebreaker.
Correct.
So you got to have one more win than they do. A&M plays at LSU, and I would expect LSU to win that. And then A&M goes to Auburn. I don't think A&M wins that one. And then A&M hosts Arkansas. I mean, that there's a chance of catching. Surpassing them might be tough, but that could very well happen. It could be that A&M ends up 8-10. They could lose those last three. So, but having said that, I think Tennessee would be a 7, 8, or 9 seed. As a 7 seed, they would play on Thursday in the 7 o'clock Eastern time game against the 10 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And
that would not be impacted by the first night of the tournament, Wednesday, because that's right. 11 and 14 and 12 and 13. So that matchup would just be set going in. And right now that would be a second game against Missouri.
Correct. And then if Tennessee's the 8 or 9 seed, which is certainly very possible, right now they'd be playing Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a rematch, I think Alabama led by 14 or 15, whatever it was in the first half. Tennessee rallied to win that game, but that would be a rematch of that. That game would be 11 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday. So Tennessee likely is going to play Thursday either at 11 a.m. Eastern or, wait a minute, I did the wrong way.
Yeah.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock
That's
Eastern.
Right.
Went the wrong way. 1 o'clock
you
Eastern.
You went mountain time.
Yeah. I spent too much time in Arizona.
That's it.
So 1 o'clock Eastern time on the Thursday the 12th or at 7 o'clock Eastern time on the that night. So we'll see what happens, but that's what it looks like right now for Tennessee and trying to project what other teams in the SEC will do. Auburn's going to win it. Kentucky's going to win it. I can't see Auburn catching them. Of course, the big game there would be when Auburn plays at Kentucky Saturday.
Yep.
And if Kentucky wins that, it's over. You know, there's nobody. Then they're not going to be caught. And I don't think they will get caught. And I think they'll beat Auburn at Rupp. LSU has an outside shot at doing that, but they go to Florida, and I don't know that they're going to get by with that one. I think LSU beats A&M at home this weekend, but then they have to go to Arkansas, and that's not a gimme. And they should beat Georgia in Baton Rouge. So
yeah, Georgia's playing a little bit better yeah. Now. Granted, they took on an Auburn team that at the time had just started to try and work without their heralded freshman. And so Georgia came back to win that ball game, beat Vanderbilt. So it's back-to-back wins for the first time this season that Georgia carries tonight into South Carolina. So who knows? Maybe Georgia's got a little bit more sting in their stinger.
Before the Bulldogs played Auburn, we talked about, I said that's a dangerous game for them because Georgia does have some pretty good players if they happen to get hot on the same night, and then they beat Auburn. But they're 1-6 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So an awful road team. So, but again, if you've got Anthony Edwards and he's got a couple other players that are pretty good around him, if they all play well on the same night, they could end up upsetting somebody on the road. I kind of doubt it. What's really kind of not good for this league to me, if you look at the four teams with the worst record in the SEC, they've won a combined 2 games on the road. So if I add it up real quick, I get 2-26.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So...
Yeah, those are the difference makers, the victories you can get away from home.
Yeah.
And for Tennessee, the Volunteers, very similar to the Lady Vols, there is one team that's ahead of Tennessee in the overall conference standings that Tennessee has a victory against, and that's South Carolina. Could very easily have had two if they had found a better way to manage the final 90 seconds in that yeah. ball game. They would have had 2 wins against South Carolina, and they'd actually be ahead of the Gamecocks. And perhaps looking at an outside shot with Florida still to come to Knoxville this weekend to maybe jump up there and even get a double bye. But Tennessee only has that one victory against South Carolina. Otherwise, it lost to A&M, Mississippi State, LSU, Auburn, and Kentucky.
Yeah, and it's not been the greatest of years for the Vols, no doubt about it. I do think, we've talked about this, I think they have a chance to have an exceptional team next year.
Mm-hmm.
But to do that, they have to find, in my opinion, one other player that can have an impact playing inside. Maybe it's Plavsic. Maybe it's Kumwa. Maybe it's somebody else. But they got to find somebody else inside to help John Fulkerson.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Hour number 3 of Sports Talk Now in the rearview mirror. Again, updating what's going on with Tennessee. It's now 7-0 Volunteers over UNC Asheville as they play in the bottom of the 6th. 2 on, nobody out. Hour number 4 of Sports Talk coming up, a practice report with Eric Kane. We'll catch up with former Alabama coach Wimp Sanderson, and it starts with your chance to win with a Sports Fix at 6. That's all coming your way on 99.1, The Sports Animal.